Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us early today and on the last day of the APHA conference. I'll be talking about global health governance in relation to counterfeit medicines and why we need a little bit of a change when we talk about governance for this particular public health issue. So as far as disclosures, I do have a fellowship with a nonprofit organization who does policies and procedures or programs to protect consumers from counterfeit or contraband medicines. This fellowship is not related to the research that I'm presenting, and since I'm still a PhD candidate, I welcome any fellowship money I can get. So so to begin, we'll talk about the current challenges around counterfeit medicines. One, there is a global distribution. It's not just a high-income country problem. It's not just a resource-poor country problem. We really have global distribution all around the world. Provide some case studies and examples of that later in the presentation. We do have arguments over the exact terminology of what we should call counterfeit medicines. I was at WHO last year, and we're still kind of trying to determine what the appropriate terminology is. So WHO has come up with this long definition: substandard, spurious, falsely labeled, falsified, counterfeit medical products, or SSFLFC. So that's the problem. Is a lot of developing countries and also low to middle income countries believe that certain products, if they're infringing on patents, shouldn't be considered counterfeit. And there's a legitimate argument there, but unfortunately, that's the reason why we have this such a very long definition. So if we can't even really agree to a definition to this problem, you can imagine governance is even harder to do. One of the other crucial issues is we have a lack of coordinated surveillance and data, so we really don't know the scope of the problem, and we'll talk about that a little bit more as well. Another thing is it's exacerbated by the frantic pace of globalization. We have interconnected economic systems now, and also technology advance, which allows for the distribution of these products online. It's a multifaceted problem, however, and that's why we need governance, because we need to involve both the private sector and the public sector in any type of potential solutions. And also, because it's a global distribution, you have to involve a number of countries, producing countries, consuming countries, intermediate countries, etc. The private sector does have a role because they manufacture a lot of these products, and unfortunately, sometimes they're the only people that can actually accurately assay the product to make sure that it's authentic or not. But really what we need is also public sector surveillance to improve detection of counterfeit medicines. We can't rely on the private sector alone because they're only interested in a subset of drugs that are of their particular business interest. So global enforcement efforts have really only been successful when we engage with different stakeholders, including public-private partnerships, and we'll show you some models of that as well. But on the left, you can see a number of organizations that are working on this issue right now, including technology providers, of course, international organizations, and drug regulatory agencies. Another thing that's difficult in regards to the governance aspect of this is we have a lot of laws. In the U.S., we have the Ryan Hyde Act, which was named after a young man who died in San Diego after purchasing painkillers online. It only addresses controlled substances, so it's a limited subset of medicines that it deals with, but controlled substance abuse is one of the most egregious forms of non-medical use of prescription medications that impacts our youth and also our adult population as well. But we have other instruments that are going on now. Kenya had an anti-counterfeit act criticized as protecting intellectual property rights, rightfully so in that case, I believe. ACTA is also another plurilateral instrument that may come together, but it's focused on IP as well. So really that's, I think, sending the wrong message, because we need to focus on this issue from a patient safety issue instead of an intellectual property issue. Metacrime is also regional agreement with the Council of Europe that seeks to criminalize this trade. So the scope of this issue is that really, as far as the online distribution of counterfeit medicines, which we'll talk about a little bit more, you can find anything and everything online pretty easily. This mostly hits our high-income markets, and unfortunately, it's probably hitting a lot of the vulnerable patient populations because they don't have access to the traditional healthcare system. GMP, good manufacturing practices, are relatively absent, though there's a huge range. This picture over here shows a raid that they did, and you can see that it looks like it's out of somebody's garage or something like that. So a lot of the manufacturing can be very substandard GMP, or some of it is actually pretty good. It's just there's a huge spectrum of manufacturing occurring. Counterfeit medicines, just like any other type of counterfeit, they have to look good, they have to look authentic. So a lot of times the packaging and the pills, how they're set up, looks like the authentic thing. So they spend a lot of money on the packaging to make it look authentic. There's some pictures there that show the difference between an authentic and a fake. Even industry analysts have a hard time differentiating these two. In resource-poor settings, we do have counterfeit medicines. Surveys have shown that an estimated 30% of drugs sold in Kenya are counterfeit. Now, these are surveys that were done about 5-6 years ago, so we need more data supporting what the prevalence of counterfeit medicines are in these countries as well. If we extend it out to cough syrup, et cetera, we all know that China had a huge counterfeit cough syrup issue, which actually expanded globally and killed, unfortunately, children as well. So this is a problem in resource-poor countries. In resource-poor countries, the primary issue is at the community pharmacy level and small local drugstores, where owners may not have the ability to detect counterfeit products. Also, because the pharmaceutical regulatory systems are a little less controlled, we do have a problem with this illicit trade showing up here. The picture down here, the pink one, if you can tell, it's a dust mite in an anti-malarial medicine. So obviously you don't want that type of matter in your medical products. Now, we do have some limited data. The Pharmaceutical Security Institute is a group of law enforcement officials, or ex-law enforcement officials, who work directly with primarily pharmaceutical manufacturers and law enforcement around the world. And they collect surveillance data on counterfeit medicines. So they've shown an increase in counterfeiting of 122%. They try to align the idea or the concept of counterfeit medicines with the WHO's definition. So hopefully there's not too much discrepancy between those. Of course, they do track diversions, which is a separate issue. And that's when authentic medicine is just stolen from a truck or a warehouse, etc. As far as by region, most of the searches and seizures and the transit and the detection is happening in Asia, which is indicative of the fact that that's where all the manufacturing is going on. But there are some severe limitations to this particular type of data. I'll talk about the strengths real quick. At least the data is being pulled from various data sources, which is good. It's not just being pulled from the pharmaceutical companies and what they report, because that would be heavily skewed towards particular drug products, and potentially, you know, the data may not be as robust. But I wouldn't call it the best available, but I would call it one of the only available, and that's kind of the problem. We really don't have public-level surveillance data on this particular issue. There could be reporting biases across regions, because some regions don't surveil for counterfeit medicines and they don't try to detect it. There's a subset of drugs, of course, that are brand drugs or proprietary drugs, so pharmaceutical companies aren't necessarily interested in looking for antibiotics, counterfeit antibiotics, et cetera, because they're not producing those. And largely this data is actually proprietary. There is some information on their website, but this data isn't available to researchers to really explore and see what the problem is. So we recently had a case of Avastin here in the U.S., where we have found counterfeit Avastin in almost 76 clinics. And we're a closed drug regulatory system, so it's kind of concerning that a highly regulated system like ours would still be impacted by counterfeit medicines. The fake counterfeit Avastin contained cornstarch, acetone, and other chemicals, but no active pharmaceutical ingredient, so it didn't treat as it was supposed to. It was a global trade, so the counterfeit Avastin originated, we think, from Turkey, then moved to Switzerland, then moved to Denmark, then moved to the United Kingdom, and then finally hit our shores here. It's important to note that the actual counterfeit Avastin did have language on it that looked Turkish or of some other language. So the prescriber, the provider, arguably had a responsibility to inspect at least at that level. The gray market, again, this is a kind of nebulous term. It's the wholesalers, the drug wholesaler market, which is less regulated than the manufacturers. Some online pharmacies were also connected to this particular issue. In the end, FDA contacted 76 doctors in 22 states that had purchased counterfeit Avastin. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about online pharmacies and why they are a particularly good case study for governance in this area. Once things kind of hit the internet, they really go global. So if you have an internet pharmacy you put online, you can sell to pretty much anyone you want, and there's no distinction between state borders. And we really have a hard time, we really have a hard time regulating this space because it is digital. So it makes it very difficult. And of course, there are economic issues such as free trade zones that allow the export-import of these products a little easier. Some of the issues that are very challenging when we talk about the virtual marketplace for drugs is that websites really close quickly. We have some colleagues that are computer scientists. They're always better at this stuff than we are. And they say that the cycle is about 7 days for online pharmacy. So it's just so easy to create an online pharmacy. It's so easy to put up another template under another URL. And they want to switch really quickly so they avoid law enforcement. So 7 days, it's really hard to detect one. And then they use a network of affiliates to promote their products. And it's a lot of money as well. Forms of online e-marketing can impact thousands of consumers, instantly driving demand. We see that they're moving not towards just online advertising, but also social media-based advertising. They're very, sophisticated in their marketing techniques. They hit the whole platform of marketing forms, and we're even having a hard time here in the U.S. dealing with direct-to-consumer advertising and regulating that space, especially on the digital side. And, of course, the web is anonymous, relatively, so you can hide or mask your IP address, or you can hide who your ISP provider is. There's all types of services, even if you use a GoDaddy.com or a commercial service, you can actually look for those more confidential or clandestine type of services. Again, if you're doing it online, it's hard to enforce. Impossibility of screening products when they come in. CPB or the Customs Border Patrol can only inspect about 2% of everything that comes in. It's also difficult to attribute death from these products because you have to do a toxicology report, and you'd also have to determine that the person bought a medicine online. So really don't know the scope of that as well. I won't go into too much more, but we do have what we would call a shadow online drug supply chain because we do have the illegal manufacturers, which vary to a high degree because actually some of them can be relatively good quality, but it's hard to determine what the quality is unless you actually assay the particular medicines they're providing. So we don't really know the quality, but we know that from certain searches and seizures that some of them are really using bad manufacturing practices, if you can call it that. We also have facilitators in the middle who get these products in large bulk. One example on the online side is Alibaba. If you go online to Alibaba, they were just, I think, sold by Yahoo recently. They sell, you can buy hundreds of pills, like not just one or two, but you can buy a whole bulk of things easily on Alibaba. And also you can buy the active pharmaceutical ingredient or the materials to produce those medicines on those wholesale sites. But another interesting aspect of this particular problem is that we do have legal providers in the mix. Because if you're an online pharmacy, you can't have an online pharmacy without your hosting. You can't have your online pharmacy without your search terms, all those things that we kind of take for granted in the online marketplace. So Google was hit with a $500 million fine by the Department of Justice in association with advertising, sponsored advertising for online pharmacies. Credit card processors also, they take a cut whenever someone pays for a pharmacy product online, even if it's legitimate or illegitimate. And the problem with that is someone, this whole system, there are people creating profit, and the question is whether they should have a responsibility to police or at least surveil from a public health perspective. So one case study I'll show you on online pharmacies is we recently had Operation Pangea 5, which is an Interpol-based activity, participation of more than 100 countries, involved law enforcement, customs, national drug regulators, ISPs, which of course is private sector, and payment providers and delivery services. It shut down more than 18,000 websites, 3.75 million counterfeit pills confiscated, 80 individuals under investigation, about 3.75 million worth of seizures of drugs. The only problem, those numbers look great, but you can still go online and find drugs online. If you just type in the term no prescription in your particular product, you can find it. And the other problem is these sites, these 18,000 sites will just pop up again, probably very shortly. The FDA did its own study. They found that about 23% of people of a 6,000 consumer online consumer population, 23% of them were purchasing drugs online. So there are people purchasing, especially in the U.S. So again, this is allowing the distribution of counterfeit medicines, and we really need to be doing a better job to surveil on this. Impact was a group led by WHO, which include a public-private partnership model, but they were criticized because it involved, of course, the private sector, and we'll talk about why that may be, WHO may not be the best place to put enforcement. But we do believe that public-private partnerships, at least within the context of online pharmacies, are necessary from an enforcement perspective because so many of the actors here are the private sector. The private sector manufactures a lot of the product. They provide the infrastructure to allow for online pharmacies to exist. And really, if they're profiting or if they are involved in the process, they should also be involved in the solution and held accountable to that solution as well. Because arguably, they're enabling this form of public health issue. So we do believe that they need to be involved primarily to keep them accountable to the solution. We also think that there's a need for rebalancing global health governance within the international organization context. WHO is not an enforcement agency. It's never been an enforcement agency, and it's been criticized by its member states for engaging in this type of activity. So what WHO should really do is focus on public health, and I'll show you what I believe that they should be concentrating on in the next slide. UNODC has traditionally done illicit drugs, but they could extend this, of course, to counterfeit drugs. They're very more proactive in engaging with law enforcement and customs and border people, so they could leverage existing treaties to try to address this issue. And Interpol is this huge, you know, police organization. They could do a lot of the enforcement aspects. WIPO and WTO could continue in their respective areas, and perhaps there could be a collaboration and a development of public-private partnerships in this space. So what we propose is that all these international organizations really focus on their core strengths. For global health or public health, WHO should be the key player in that space. One, they should really concentrate on research, services, and technical assistance to improve access to medicines, because the main problem here is people are accessing online pharmacies because they don't have, arguably they don't have alternatives in a lot of cases. So we really need to improve access, we need to improve the ability for patients to get safe medicines, and we need to make sure that they have choices that they can make rational decisions on. Strengthening surveillance and reporting, again, we don't have very good data, so we need WHO to engage in that space, and research on actually the health impact, because some of these medicines may not be counterfeit, some of them may be substandard, so we need to really assess what the health impact is. From the UNODC side, they can coordinate legal enforcement, and they can combat the organized crime element of it, because a lot of organized crimes, such as the Russian mafia, are involved in this space. The penalties are much lower. I've said this before, but if I wasn't a PhD student or candidate, I'd probably be in this business because it makes a lot more career sense, but I wouldn't want to engage in illegal activity. But they make a lot of money, and It's the organized crime entities that were previously doing illicit drugs like cocaine, heroin, etc., are now moving to this model because it's less risky, it's just as profitable, and they can even do two sides of the business. Interpol could do the drug seizures, the private sector engagement, and the border control. So private sector engagement could be outside of the WHO, and so it wouldn't be criticized the same way. And there's an argument for UN agency policy coherence across these agencies, which has been done for a number of public health issues. So finally, just a summarization. Global health governance is really necessary to combat counterfeit medicines, and our current system is fragmented, and we need more cooperation and coordination among the various stakeholders. We feel that current enforcement efforts are insufficient. If you can still find an online pharmacy online right now, no prescription, then we still have a problem, and that these organized crime networks shouldn't really profit from medicines that are fake, and they shouldn't be trading in this business. And better coordination is necessary through traditional state and international organizations, as well as the integration of strengths of partnerships. If you are interested in a little bit more information on this, our preliminary policy proposal was published in an article in Foreign Affairs, so you can read it there. So thank you very much, and I welcome questions at the end. Thanks.